This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into a Wednesday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Nick Whalen, joined by Eric Halterman, stepping in for Jeff Erickson. Great show coming your way over the next 60 minutes on the Sports Betting Network. We have some storylines starting to emerge from NFL training camps. Got a big injury, unfortunately, on the defensive side for the Atlanta Falcons. We have starting quarterbacks locked in for the Hall of Fame game tomorrow night. We'll hit some baseball news from a busy Tuesday in MLB. Got the Wyndham Championship finishing out the regular season schedule for the PGA. That, of course, starts tomorrow morning. Len Hochberg from RotoWire will stop by to give us a full betting and DFS preview. We're going to have Sean Green stopping by the show. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide, that came out on Monday. So we'll run through some of Sean's plays, including some juicy long shots to not only make, but advance in the college football playoff. And then we'll get all of Eric Halterman's plays for the Wednesday Major League Baseball slate. Make sure you're downloading. Make sure you're subscribed to Prop Points in podcast form. You can find us on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. As always, search Prop Points, search VSiN. Not only will you find us, but you'll find all VSiN shows in podcast form. We'll start out in the NFL, Eric, where we have some unfortunate news out of Atlanta. This, of course, happened yesterday, but we did get confirmation this morning. Jalen Walker, one of two first-round defensive ends that the Falcons took in the 2025 draft, officially out for the season. He has a torn ACL, a huge blow to what was a vastly improved Falcons pass rush last season. This, of course, comes on top of James Pierce, the other first-round pick, having a serious legal run-in this offseason. His status still very much up in the air. Would imagine a suspension is likely coming for Pierce at some point. But you talk about an Atlanta team that for a five-year stretch, 2020 through 2024, dead last in the NFL in total sacks, just 141 sacks in that five-year span. That was 18 fewer than the next lowest team, which, of course, was the Jacksonville Jaguars, almost 100 fewer than the team with the most sacks in that sample, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Last year, all of a sudden, Falcons jumped up to second in the NFL in total sacks with 57 behind only the Denver Broncos, putting up 68. So a big blow for the Atlanta Falcons. Again, Jalen Walker done for the season with that torn ACL. My question to you, Eric, as we start to look ahead to the Hall of Fame game, which is, if we're being honest, really like a preseason game. You know, I always get fired up for the Hall of Fame game every year. Football is back. You turn it on and then you realize, okay, this is not really what I remembered NFL football to be. But we will get our first look at Carson Beck tomorrow night in Canton. He'll go up against Kenny Pickett, leading the Carolina Panthers. I know you're a baseball guy first and foremost, Eric, but you pay attention to the NFL plenty. Your level of interest in the Hall of Fame game, is it going to make one of the TVs tomorrow night?
You know, it might. I think because it's the first preseason game, it is fun to see some NFL football again. But I am like you. You turn it on and then you realize, wait a second, this isn't quite like the football I remember. So I think usually the very start of preseason, there is a little bit of interest just to get the mind back in the football mindset again, inspire you to do a few more fantasy football drafts, etc. As far as actually taking away anything from these games, though, I'm not sure about that. Do you think, though, with Carson Beck, is there any chance that a strong performance here changes the conversation about him? Doesn't look like he's considered to have much of a chance to open the year as the Cardinals quarterback. Do you think that's at all on the line if he goes out there and has an incredible first half?
It would have to be the performance of a lifetime in this setting where we don't really expect to see anything close to starters on either side of the ball for either team. Now, I think the Cardinals are locked in with Jacoby Brissett, at least to begin the year. Now, if Arizona turns out to be as bad as a lot of the projections have them, I believe that win total last I checked was sitting at 3.5. If they're 1-10 through 11 games, then yeah, maybe we do see Carson Beck later in the season. But I think Arizona is at least going to see this through. There is actually some appealing talent on that roster. So they'll see what they can do with Jacoby Brissett. Panthers, by the way, 1.5-point favorites at DraftKings, total all the way down to 35.5. 12 of the last 14 Hall of Fame games have gone under 40 points. But I will mention last year was not one of those. Chargers beat the Lions 34-7. That was Trey Lance, as we all remember, outdueling Kyle Allen. Before we talk some baseball, Eric, we have a message from our friends, ourselves, over at rotowire.com. Do you want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff gives you rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy leagues, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Check out rotowire.com right now. Use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. That'll get you 15% off anything we offer at RotoWire. That's rotowire.com, promo code V-S-I-N. Great time, by the way, to jump in over at RotoWire. It feels like we're rolling out new pages, new tools every single day. Site looks great. We've revamped everything ahead of football season, so go check us out at rotowire.com. Eric, we had a busy night in Major League Baseball on Tuesday. The Milwaukee Brewers became the first team to reach 70 wins. They pick up a 4-2 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates. Good to see Jackson Churio waking up a bit. He had a home run, three hits, couple RBI. On the other hand, another 0-for-4 night for Christian Yelich, who has really, really struggled over the last month plus. But the Brewers did also demote Brendan Sproat last night. He ended up taking the loss a couple nights ago. If you've been following this, Eric, I think Pat Murphy has essentially hated Brandon Sproat from day one. I think he's just been waiting for an opportunity to send him down. We, of course, will see Kyle Harrison back from the IL today. Dustin May inserted into this rotation. And we also saw Antonio Senzatella, who the Brewers acquired from Colorado at the deadline. He made his debut last night in relief. Did throw a no-hitter in one inning. Where do you land on the Dustin May addition? You know, it was a little bit underwhelming, of course, relative to the idea of chasing Tarik Skubal. But the more I've read up on this, the more I see these quotes from scouts saying, I'm kind of scared of what the Brewers are going to turn Dustin May into.
Yeah, I liked that Dustin May move for the Brewers. Don't think it was too expensive there. He's somebody who has been up and down, I guess, throughout his career, we could say. Really showed some flashes early on with the Dodgers, but struggled to stay healthy, then missed about a year and a half with Tommy John surgery. There was an esophageal tear at some point. He got injured like eating a salad or something. It was absurd. He's had some rough run out there, and the numbers since he's been back the last couple years, ERA is 4.96, 4.38 the last two seasons, but I don't think that current ERA accurately describes how good he's been. He gave up 13 runs in his first two starts of the year this year, but since then it's just a 3.54 ERA, and I would trust the Brewers to get the most out of him like they've done with, say, Kyle Harrison this year, like they didn't really do with Brandon Sproat. He showed flashes throughout the year. He does miss some bats, but the control just hasn't been there. I was kind of surprised they kept riding him given the depth that they have at the rotation. They have now even more depth with Dustin May joining the team with Kyle Harrison returning from injury, so it makes sense that they don't need Sproat anymore. I would not write him off next time we see him. I do still think he could help this team maybe down the stretch in a bullpen role, maybe not until next year as a starter. I do still think there's a talented pitcher there, but I think May is a real upgrade, even though it's just a rental here. I think this is one that Brewers fans should be pretty happy about.
Brewers in plus 320, by the way, to finish with the best regular season record in baseball. Dodgers still heavy favorites in that market at minus 185, but Dodgers added another loss last night, Eric. They've quietly now dropped five in a row. They fall to the Cubs 5-1. This was the debut of Tarik Skubal, he was not the issue by any means. Tarik Skubal looked like Tarik Skubal, six strong, four hits, two earned runs, two walks, six strikeouts, but Dodgers bats went cold once again. Any real takeaways for you here? I mean, it's always going to be semi-alarming when a team with the talent level of the Dodgers loses five in a row, but would you consider looking at Milwaukee, maybe looking at a team like Atlanta at 5-1 to finish with the best record in baseball?
And the takeaway here is the Dodgers should have gone out and got Javier Assad, who outdueled Tarik Skubal yesterday. I think, though, what you're saying, though, is this Dodgers team really way better than everyone else? Or should we be interested in some of those other teams to win the NL pennant, maybe win the World Series? I think absolutely. I think it's very true that the Dodgers have the best team in baseball, and they got better by adding Tarik Skubal. But last year, of course, they nearly were beaten by the Blue Jays, mere inches away from being taken down there. And we know the way baseball works, it is just much more of a 50-50 proposition than any of the other sports. And when you get to just a short playoff series, think about how short those series are compared to a 162-game regular season, anything can happen. So, yes, I think this Dodgers team is accurately presented as the favorites, but I don't think they're that much better than the chasing pack. I think they're set up well for October, and if enough of their pitchers are healthy in October, they're going to be a very, very scary team to face. But it would not shock me at all if somebody like the Brewers or the Braves were able to beat them in a short playoff series.
14-2 win last night for the Boston Red Sox, who continue to cook. They, of course, acquired Adley Rutschman at the deadline to finish out the first seg here, Eric. Brandon on the show yesterday gave out the Red Sox to win the AL pennant. Are you that in on the Boston Red Sox? Did they do enough? Have you seen enough over the last month to fully buy in?
I think this is a pretty good team. I don't think it's a great team, but I think it's a pretty good team that deserves to be thought of as one of the favorites. They've been hot for a while. If they can remain hot over the last couple months, there is talent up and down this roster, and they got better at the deadline. I think the Red Sox absolutely could make some moves. I think the team they were early in the season is not them. I think getting even more guys back from injury, they'll have Trevor Story, they'll have Roman Anthony, they'll have Curtis Meade, they'll have Adley Rutschman. This team could be scary.
Len Hochberg joining us to break down the Wyndham Championship when we return. Keep it locked. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Eric Alterman hanging out with you on this Wednesday. Got double guests coming your way in the next two segments. We head out to the Progressive Guest Line to bring in one of our favorites, Len Hochberg, our senior golf writer and DFS betting expert over at rotowire.com, at Len Hochberg. Give him a follow. Len, we have reached the end of the PGA regular season. The Wyndham Championship starts up tomorrow. But as you wrote up in your excellent preview that you do each and every week over at RotoWire, you know, normally we're focusing on the event itself. You're giving us some plays, but this Wyndham Championship, I think you could say, means more maybe than any other in the past. So tell us why it's not just about 2026, not just about 2027, but looking multiple years into the future as far as ramifications coming out of this tournament.
Be fascinating, and I'll try and do this as easily and briefly as possible. But in 2028, when they go to the two-track championship series, challenger series, and the top 120 or so guys get into the championship series, well, where are those 120 going to come from? Well, they're going to come from whoever is the top 120 in 2027. Well, how do you get to be really good in 2027? Well, you play well, but also getting into the signature events in 2027 is a really, really good starting point because you have guaranteed points, guaranteed cash. And how do you get into the 2027 signature events? You finish 2026 among the top 50 golfers. So that's what's happening here this week. Not only trying to get into the top 70 in the playoffs that start next week, but then these guys want to even get past the first playoff event into the second playoff event and secure a spot in the top 50. And that will carry them largely for the next 2 years.
147 players in this tournament. Defending champion Cameron Young is the heavy favorite, but can he overcome some recent inconsistencies on the greens to replicate his dominant 2025 form at Sedgefield?
Yeah, you make a good point, Eric. You know, that's been the weak spot this year, putting. I mean, it's not been terrible. He's still above average, but he's around 90th on tour, which is, you know, not great, but there are far worse golfers than that. And when you put the rest of his game together, just a really long driver of the golf ball, a very straight driver of the golf ball, which isn't really common to be both. So he has a big edge there. And, you know, he, as you mentioned, he won this tournament. He has been playing well lately after some sort of mid-season hiccups. He's finished top 10 the last 2 weeks, last two tournaments, came very close at the Open Championship. There's a lot to like about him this week. And he might be the front runner right now for Player of the Year in a wide open season so far, with just this and the playoffs left to go.
Cam Young currently sitting plus 830 to be your outright winner. As Eric said, far and away the favorite to win the tournament. But second in the odds, Len, we find Jackson Koivun, who, of course, made waves a couple of weeks ago on tour. And a little bit surprising to me to see those odds as short as they are, hanging around 18-1 over at DraftKings. But as you wrote in your preview piece on RotoWire, Len, you're in on Jackson Koivun.
Yeah, you know, there are two guys in the DraftKings model that are both in the 10,000s, and I usually don't like to pick them both. I like to give people a choice, but there really is something to like about both these guys. And to your point about his odds being really short, we see that in golf all the time, Nick. We see that in sports all the time. Players, the shiny new object, the flavor of the month, players who people like. That's sort of built into the odds because we know some people are going to bet with their heart more than their head. I mean, the books know that. So I do think he's a little bit shorter than he would be otherwise. All that said, he is a good fit for this course. We think of college kids coming out of just these huge, huge bombers. And that's not the case with Koivun. When he won a couple of weeks ago, he was outside the top 50 in driving distance. He's just a really smart player, especially for age 21, strong iron player, strong around the greens, which a lot of college players are not, and an excellent putter. So TPC Sedgefield does not require distance. That's one reason why I like him so much this week.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about this course, Len. I was looking at your article for RotoWire. You were saying that some of the hardest holes at Sedgefield are on the back nine rather than the front. What's going on there? Is that a unusually tough back nine or an unusually easy front?
Well, let's put it in perspective of the course itself, where the winning score most years, eight of the last 10 years, has been between 20 and 22 under. So we're not talking about Oakmont here. But yeah, the harder holes are on the back, and harder holes tend to be, you know, the long par fours, and there aren't too many of them at TPC Sedgefield. So it does offer, you know, at least a modicum of difficulty that could, you know, swing the tournament on the back nine on a Sunday. But there are a lot of short holes here, and really the key is getting the ball in the fairway more than hitting it far. If you can hit it far and straight, sure, but it's straight is more important. The last four winners before Cameron Young were Aaron Rye and Lucas Glover and Tom Kim and Kevin Kisner. I mean, these guys play almost senior golf on the PGA Tour. They're very short and just hit it right down the middle every time. That's really what's key at Sedgefield.
Folks, fantasy football should be about more than setting a lineup and checking a score. Fantasy Boss is the new season-long fantasy sports platform built to keep the whole league involved. Commissioners get deep tools to run redraft, keeper, dynasty, best ball, guillotine, and more across any sport. Players get a modern experience that makes every matchup feel bigger. Weekly recap videos turn the week into a story everyone can relive and argue about. And taunt videos give trash talk a face. Beat the Boss keeps the whole league competing all season long. Everything lives in one place, from draft night through the championship. No patchwork, no extra apps, no ads to deal with. Just a modern season-long fantasy platform with engagement built in. Create a new league or bring over the one you already run. Start your league free at fantasyboss.com/rotowire. Fantasy Boss, your league never felt so alive. We have Len Hochberg, our PGA DFS and betting expert at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, giving us some plays for the Wyndham. Len, you like Cam Young, you like Jackson Koivun at the top, but if we go a little bit further down the board, who are a couple players you're targeting, let's say in the 8,000s over at DraftKings?
Yeah, Nick, and this might be the way to go. I mean, if you play a Cameron Young, if you play a Jackson Koivun, you're probably going to have to dip into the 6,000s. It's not my favorite place this week or most weeks. But in the 8,000s, just mentioned him a moment ago, Aaron Rye, who won this tournament a few years back. This guy is outside the top 150 in driving distance, but second in driving accuracy. He's the poster boy for TPC Sedgefield. You know, he didn't have, he sort of fell back a little bit after winning the PGA Championship in May. Completely understandable, life-altering moment. But he's had some good moments since then. It's really just a perfect course for him. And Davis Thompson at 8,400. He's going to have a hard time making the playoffs because he's still in the 80s somewhere in the point standings. He's going to need probably a top five finish, but he's been making a late push, top tens his last two tournaments. And also he's improved every year he's played the Wyndham. He's played it four times, began with a miscut, then 22nd, then 12th, then 11th last year.
One more guy I'd love to ask you about, Len Blades Brown, a 19-year-old American. We've had some young Americans having some success recently. Jackson Koivun winning in Minnesota. Michael Thorbjornsson winning for the first time last week in Detroit. Is this the year of the young American? Is Blades Brown going to continue that trend?
Yeah, it's really funny, Eric. I mean, we think Jackson Koivun is young. He's calling Blades Brown kid. Blades Brown, 19 years old and just recently turned 19. He's chosen a different path to get to professional golf other than going to college, as Jackson Koivun did at Auburn. Jackson Koivun's been playing mostly on the Korn Ferry Tour this year, has done very well. He's ninth in the Korn Ferry standing, so he will be among the 20 graduates onto the PGA Tour next year. But he's played a bunch of PGA tournaments already this year, nine, made the cut in eight of them, six top 25s. He's another one. He hits the ball very far, like the young guys do, but he's also pretty darn straight. And so at price down in the 7,000s this week, he's really somebody I have an eye on as well this week.
Len, we got about 20 seconds left here. Give us a deep, deep value if you have to dip into maybe the 6,000s on DraftKings.
There's a guy named Chris Ventura. He was at Oklahoma State, the Oklahoma State Golf Pipeline. He's made only six cuts all year, but three of them have been top fives. Second at the Zurich, fifth at the ISCO, fifth last week at the Rocket Classic. He's a very good driver of the golf ball, and he's known for his putting. So I'm just going to take a flyer on him and see what happens.
Len Hochberg, everybody, find his great work for us over at rotowire.com. We're heading back out to the Progressive Guest Line when we come back. Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast going to give us some college football futures. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whalen, Eric Alterman hanging out with you. It's Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Just chatted with our friend Len Hochberg on the Progressive Guest Line. We're going right back out to that guest line to bring in our guy Sean Green. You know him as the host of the Sports Gambling Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at Sean T. Green. Sean, a lot that we want to get to. I want to talk a little Eagles with you, but first want to focus on your many contributions to the 2026 VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which you can go grab right now over at VSiN.com. And I know you had some really interesting plays as far as conference winners, as far as teams to make the Final Four in the college football playoff. But let's start out with one of those conference winners. Look at that Air Force to take down the Mountain West at plus 450.
Let's go. Yeah, I mean, first off, I think Mountain West in general looks really wide open here with the new teams, no Boise State in there. And yeah, I do like the Air Force Falcons here at plus 550. You know, you look at Troy Calhoun. He's not a guy who's going to have three losing seasons in a row, back-to-back losing seasons. The last time he did that previously, he followed it up with an 11-2 season. And, you know, as a guy who likes the Phil Steele guide, Phil Steele has him as one of the most improved teams. I think their defense, finally, they have some veterans there. They, you know, their defense was a real liability in previous years, but now those same guys have been in the system. And then you look at their quarterback, Liam Sarka, who I think is a very good dual threat quarterback. Pretty manageable schedule there. Always love the elevation. I'm a big elevation handicap guy, so I get the home elevation here. I think Air Force is going to win double digit games, so I think they're going to be in the mix here to win the Mountain West at plus 550. I do think Troy Calhoun, very good head coach. So let's aim high, Air Force Falcons.
Let's talk a little Heisman Trophy, Sean. I see you've got something of a long shot here. Jaren Kiawe Sagapuletele to win the Heisman Trophy. This is the quarterback at Cal. Tell me a little bit more about JKS. Why are you in on him? I assume it's not just the longest name, the easiest to click on.
Yeah, when I wrote his name down for a long shot in the college football guide over on VSiN, I didn't think that I would be I didn't do the look ahead to the idea of like, hey, I got to go and explain why I'm picking this guy, which means pronouncing his name every single segment. And I watched the Instagram video where the news walks you through how to pronounce his name. You nailed it. Nice work. But yes, I'll just go by JKS as you set it up. I mean, again, I love taking shots on these guys, quarterbacks who had awesome freshman years, and he threw for 3,400 yards as a true freshman. He won a bunch of big games late. His last couple games, he had 650 yards, six touchdowns, 18 touchdowns on the season, including four rushing scores. I know it's a bit of a long shot, but you can find it like 80-1. This left-handed kid from Hawaii who's just dynamic. I mean, there's talks about him being a number one pick, not this year in the draft, but like later on down the line. They brought in some weapons for him at Cal. The Rutgers receiver, Dorian Thomas, the tight end out of New Mexico is Dorian Thomas. They also brought in the Rutgers receiver, Ian Strong. So they're building a nice core around him. And then Cal, I think, is going to be a tough place to play for some of these East Coast teams dealing with the travel, which I think is going to create some awesome opportunities for JKS. And he's just a fun dude to watch. So if I have an 80-1 on a quarterback, I want to have some fun watching some late night Cal games. And I think at very least he's going to deliver on that. So it's going to be a fun sweat. 80-1. Let's go JKS.
Get into some more college football futures with Sean in just a moment. But folks, as we mentioned, the wait is over. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is officially here. Sign up for VSiN Pro today. You'll get instant access to our college football betting guide. It's got previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, betting systems, and best bets from the sharpest minds at VSiN. Plus, you'll also get our NFL betting guide. You get the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and of course, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or get a full year. You can save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We're chatting with Sean Green, host of the Sports Gambling Podcast, joining us via the Progressive Guest Line. Sean, I love some of the long shots that you're throwing out here, not only to win conference championships, but to make the Final Four in the college football playoff. And the one that really jumped out to me, and it's painful, I will say, you can see the Wisconsin paraphernalia behind me. Talking Big Ten, it's a rough go these days. But Penn State, 20-1 to make the Final Four, also 20-1 to win the Big Ten. Is this more about really, really believing in Penn State, or maybe a little bit of lack of faith in teams like Oregon and Ohio State?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I'm not quite sold on Oregon. Ohio State has shown, Indiana won the Big Ten last year. I think it's going to be tough for them to run it back. I mean, Cignetti, obviously an awesome coach, but I think you're going to have the work cut out for you. Meanwhile, Penn State, it's just setting up for the perfect season for all the Penn State fans who just said, we got to get rid of James Franklin. He can't win the big game. And then you bring in Matt Campbell. What if they start winning some big games here? And you look at their schedule. Look at that. They avoid a lot of the big dogs in the Big Ten. And so let's just start out at, hey, their win total is 8.5. Maybe their hardest game is USC at home in a whiteout environment. As someone who's went to one of those games, I don't remember it, but I was told it was an electric environment. Maybe had a couple too many cocktails. But I think they're going to just plug and play with Matt Campbell and Rocco Beck. And to me, this is just one of those cases of, hey, I'd like Penn State to get over 8.5 wins, right? So let's start there. If they're getting over 8.5 wins, well, maybe can they get to 10? I think that's pretty reasonable. If they're getting to 10, they're probably in the college football playoff. And if they get in the into the playoff, why wouldn't a team like Penn State here go on a little bit of a run? We saw it with Indiana last year, who was a much bigger long shot than Penn State is. And I just think the schedule sets up so well for them. They're going to hit the ground running in the playoffs. So, yeah, I like Penn State to go on a bit of a run here.
Let's graduate college here, Sean, and move to the NFL. And I see all your Eagles gear around, so I got to ask a fellow Birds fan about how you're feeling about the Eagles this season. Seems like every year in the Jalen Hurts, Nick Sirianni era, we know this team's going to be good. But whether they're a real Super Bowl contender or just there to make up the numbers in the playoffs, that seems to vary pretty widely from year to year, depending on who's calling the plays. Is this going to be a year where the Eagles are right up at the top of the standings or, you know, just a solid winning team that doesn't really make too much noise?
Well, I mean, as gamblers, we like simple formulas, right? And there's a simple formula in the Sirianni Hurts era. If they get knocked out of the wild card game, they go to the Super Bowl the next year. So I think we see that here once again. I mean, first off, I'm happy to break down the offense, but just let's talk about this defense with Vic Fangio adding Tariq Woolen. They're just going to be a handful there on the defensive side. And on the offensive side, dare I say, maybe a little addition by subtraction here with getting rid of AJ Brown. I think it's addition in the sense that they're not going to have to force the ball to AJ. They don't have to deal with that dynamic in the locker room. They can lean into the Sean Mannion offense. And by all the camp reports, Jalen Hurts is adapting well under center. They're going to get the play action going. And really, to me, the biggest reason the Eagles struggled last year, you can talk about the drama, you can talk about Jalen Hurts, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it was just the offensive line was injured, and now we see a healthy Lane Johnson. He's out for a couple of personal days, but he should be good to go. You got Cam Jurgens, Landon Dickerson seemingly in a much better place. If you have a team with a good offensive line, with a guy like Jalen Hurts who doesn't turn the ball over, with skill guys like Devontae Smith and Saquon Barkley, and that defense, I think they have a very high ceiling. And we've already established that even in a bad, burn down the city, the Eagles are still 11-6 and won the NFC East. So I think they're kind of catching people sleeping here a little bit because everyone wants to just lean into the drama of last year. But by all the camp reports, I've never seen the veterans be this excited about a new OC. And I'm buying in on the hype. I think they're ready to go on a nice run here.
All right, Sean, we got about 45 seconds. Hypothetically, if I told you the Eagles did not win the NFC East, which team is winning that division? Who scares you most in the NFC East?
Oh, man, this is such a hard question because I don't want, it's tough to imagine a world where the Eagles don't win the NFC East. I would kind of say, obviously, we know Dallas sucks, but I think the Commanders, if we see the Jaden Daniels of his rookie year, he has the highest ceiling, right, of other quarterbacks outside of what the Eagles have in Jalen Hurts. So if Jaden Daniels, if we see what we saw his rookie year, I think that would be the team that might be able to snake it. I'm not worried about Jackson Dart or the defense of the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, for what it's worth, I'm with you. I think the Eagles take that division. I think they are in contention for that one seed in the NFC. Great stuff, as always, from our friend Sean Green. Make sure you check him out on Twitter at Sean T. Green, and make sure you check him out and subscribe to the Sports Gambling Podcast. We'll switch things over to Major League Baseball when we come back. Eric Halterman's full card for the Wednesday slate coming up when we return in just a few moments. This is Prop Points on VSiN.
watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you up until the top of the hour. Money Moves with Jonathan Von Tobel coming your way next as part of what is just an everyday loaded lineup here on the Sports Betting Network. Eric, I know we were able to get some Eagles talk in with Sean Green, but this is really your time to shine. You're one of our baseball experts over at rotowire.com. Let's get some plays on the card for a busy Wednesday in MLB. Got a handful of day games today, including Dodgers-Cubs. Eric Lauer, Shota Imanaga is our pitching matchup. That game starting up about 20 minutes past the hour. You're looking at an Andy Páez prop to start us off.
Yeah, I'm looking at Andy Páez to homer today, and it's at around plus 345. Really, with any home run prop, though, it's more about the pitcher, and you could throw something at any of the Dodgers hitters, particularly Dodgers righties today against Shota Imanaga, who is having a typical Shota Imanaga season. He's got a decent strikeout rate, 23%. He doesn't walk anybody, just 6%, but he gives up far too many homers, a 1.7 homer per nine this year, a little bit down from last year, but still quite high. This is what Imanaga does. He is a control pitcher who doesn't allow many base runners because fly balls, if they don't leave the yard, they tend to be caught. But when he has a bad day, it does tend to be because a couple balls left the stadium. And I think that's going to happen today. The wind appears to be blowing out at Wrigley Field. As always, this is something you want to check with any bet at Wrigley Field, whether it's home runs or over-unders or anything. You do want to know about that wind, but as long as it is still blowing out, that means bad news for Shota Imanaga. So I like the Dodgers righties. Andy Páez should have the most opportunities of all the Dodgers righties to face Imanaga because he's the number two hitter. But you could look up and down that lineup, maybe sprinkle a few on a couple different Dodgers to try to go deep against Imanaga and the Cubs today.
Eric, I hope you could find a way to get me, get the viewers, the listeners fired up about an Angels-Orioles game tonight. These are two teams that I think we're looking at and wondering, okay, what is the plan here? Both were selling off at the deadline, just going to be playing out the string the rest of the way. But nonetheless, we have some betting opportunity here. Reed Detmers taking on Trevor Rogers. Now, Orioles are minus 118 favorites on the home money line, but you're looking to pick up a little bit more value.
Yeah, I think you could go to the run line for this one around plus 160 to get some real value here. And I think there's going to be some real value against the Angels in these final 2 months. I don't think there's going to be much value watching the Angels. Sorry, Angels fans, but this is a team that was bad and just got a whole lot worse at the deadline. Finally, I think Angels fans were hoping that they would do a proper sell-off the last few years. So maybe they're not that disappointed, but this team is not good. Reed Detmers on the mound today is good. That's the one thing pushing back against this bet. But this Angels lineup, man, just look at some of the names. They got Vaughn Grissom as their cleanup hitter these days. Travis d'Arnaud is in this lineup. Did you even know he was still in the league? I may or may not have before a few days ago. This Angels team, the last 30 days, 23rd best offense in baseball. And I think they're only going to get worse from there. Now, again, Reed Detmers is a good starter. He is one of the best players remaining on this Angels team. His overall numbers are comparable to Trevor Rogers, who's going for the Orioles today. Rogers has a 4.27 ERA on the year, but over his last seven starts, he's turned things around in a big way, has a 1.85 ERA. Rogers was really good last year, too, so this isn't out of nowhere. And again, this is really all about the Angels having so little talent left that I think sports bettors could have a lot of potential value against them in these final 2 months.
Let's take a look at Nats Phillies out in Philadelphia. Jake Irvin on the hill going up against Andrew Painter, putting that near 7 ERA, Eric, on the line. 23 earned runs over the last five starts alone for Andrew Painter. Is this a spot where we are left with no choice but to attack that starter for the Phillies?
Yeah, I think so. I'll try to prove that I'm not a homer here after my question to Sean in the last segment was essentially go Birds, but I would pick against the Phillies in this one. A Nationals money line, you can get around plus 174 to bet against Andrew Painter. That's not something that I'm going to turn down, even though, to be fair, national starter Jake Urban has got a 5.56 ERA on the season, although his ERA estimators are about a run and a half better than that. He actually does miss an above average amount of bats, just walks a few too many. Andrew Painter, on the other hand, all right, he did have a good outing against the Orioles his last time out in his return from the minors. Gave up just two runs in six innings, six strikeouts, three walks, three hits. But on the whole, as you said, ERA near seven. It's a 6.72 ERA, a 1.61 whip. He's gotten unlucky according to the ERA estimators, but those are still in the high fours. He just doesn't miss nearly enough bats, just an 18% strikeout rate for a guy who, as a prospect, was projected to have outstanding stuff. The stuff is probably not even fifth starter quality the way he's pitched this year. So anytime you can get this kind of plus money against him, I'm pretty interested. I know this Nationals team did get a little bit worse, especially offensively, in the last few days. They lost Luis Garcia Jr. to the Yankees at the deadline. Then they lost James Wood to the injured list. But this offense started from such a high place. They were the best team in baseball in team WRC Plus over the last 30 days. So if they were at such a high height, they can lose a few and still be a pretty good bet to put up quite a few runs on Andrew Painter.
Yeah, Cardinals-Yankees out at Yankee Stadium tonight. They've split the first two games, two very different games to begin this series. 13-7 was your score in game one. That was a Cardinals win. Yankees win 2-0 last night. Now we get Andre Pallante going up against Will Warren. How are you playing this one, Eric?
Yeah, I was searching for a strikeout prop on today's slate, and this is the one that I've landed on. Andre Pallante to go over 4.5 strikeouts. You get slight plus money on that one. Thing about today's slate is that a lot of the high strikeout offenses are going up against low strikeout pitchers, and this is one of them. The Yankees, though, have the highest strikeout rate in the league over the last 30 days, and while Pallante only has a 17% strikeout rate on the year, over 4.5 is not very hard to reach. He has reached it 8 times in 21 games this season. So I wouldn't bet on Pallante getting to 5 strikeouts against most lineups, but against this Yankees team, they can hit at times when they're at full strength, but they've struggled in general recently, given all the injuries they've had, and what's left is whiffing quite a lot. For Pallante, I look back to what he did just 2 starts ago against the Reds, who actually have the same strikeout rate as the Yankees over the last 30 days. He struck out 8 batters in that game. So Pallante can miss some bats against some bats that have a lot of swing and miss in them, and I expect that to happen today. Again, he only needs 5 to hit the over in this one.
Head out to what I will forever and always call Miller Park, where we get Pirates Brewers tonight. Paul Skeens on the hill taking on Kyle Harrison. He makes his return from the IL. Now, there was a time, Eric, on this show specifically, where it was, okay, Paul Skeens at a reasonable price, certainly Paul Skeens at plus money, we're taking it no matter what. I would like to know how concerned you are in the recent form from Paul Skeens. A 5.18 ERA since mid-May. He's been tagged for 10 earned runs over his last 2 starts. Now, he has beaten this Brewers team twice already this season, but is this a spot where you're eyeing up that Pirates money line at plus money?
Yeah, I am. I am still going to be on team give me Paul Skeens at plus money here. I'm not that worried about what he's done recently. If you look at those last 2 games, for example, did give up 10 runs in 9 1/3 innings, but he also struck out 18 batters. There's no noticeable loss of velocity here. I'm pretty sure this is just a guy who's had a couple of off starts. This is not a guy who is suddenly broken. But speaking of suddenly broken, that might be the deal with Kyle Harrison. He is just coming back from a month-long absence due to left forearm extensor tendinopathy. I can't say I know a whole lot about that one, but I do know that he struggled in his last 2 starts before injury. He was good in his 1 rehab outing, but he did walk 3 batters. So I would not fully trust Harrison in his first start back. I need to see it first, and I'm just not that far off of Paul Skeens. I think this is the worst version of Paul Skeens we've seen yet, but it's still a very, very good pitcher. Still excellent strikeout and walk numbers for the season. So I'll take Paul Skeens at plus money against a pitcher coming off the IL.
It's time to leave you with our best bets of the night. Erica, of all these baseball plays, which is your favorite?
it is that one I mentioned last. I think if you're giving me Paul Skeens at plus money, like, I'm searching for reasons not to trust Paul Skeens. Again, it's not quite the Paul Skeens we saw in previous years, but it's not far from it. So if you give me plus money, I'll take it.
Give me that Yankees run line. Cover the 1.5 against the St. Louis Cardinals, plus 130 over at DraftKings. I know the Yankees offense has been up and down of late, mostly down, if we're being honest, but feels like there's a little bit of a re-energization coming out of the deadline. 1-2-0 last night, put up 7 runs on Monday. Will Warren been much better at home than he has been on the road this season. 3.75 ERA, way better strikeout numbers at Yankee Stadium. So I'll put my faith in the Yanks to take care of business at home against the Cards and Andre Pallante. That's going to wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of Prop Points. But keep it here on VSiN Money Moves. JVT coming your way next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.